Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello and welcome to State of the Multiverse. I'm your host, Reese. Now, at this stage, I know I'm a bit of a broken record when I'm saying this, but apologies for the gap of time between the last episode. I've been very busy with work. That's all I can really say. But this episode is going to be about the Moon Knight series on Disney Plus. I will be reviewing all 6 episodes, and this is going to be from my perspective, what I feel about the show, and some other criticisms that I have heard that I feel are valid and worth bringing up. I will be talking about the things I liked as well. But first of all, I'm going to open up with my introduction to the character, because I was aware of him a couple of years before the show came out. I hadn't read too much, but I've read a little bit more now. So let's get into it. So prior to the release of the Disney Plus series Moon Knight, the most time I had familiarizing with the character was my time reading the Warren Ellis run. And I read that a couple of years ago. I picked it up in one of my comic book shops here in Ireland. And I didn't have too much experience with the character before that. I'd seen him pop up in other media. Mainly games, like he'd be a side character in a game, but a lot of people had recommended the character that he was worth looking into. So when I picked up the Warren Ellis run, I was very surprised in how much I liked it. It was stylistic for sure, like even the intros to each chapter, the panels and the designs were all framed as if it was almost the intro to a Netflix series like Daredevil. And the run for Warren Ellis, I think it was 5 or 6 issues. It wasn't that long. It was just mainly the one book. I haven't read the following books after that where it was a different writer each time. But the Warren Ellis run, I really enjoyed. He's mostly Mr. Knight in that. I think, I don't know whether that was the first book where he was Mr. Knight. He possibly could have been. But the Mr. Knight persona was really cool in the books, and he was brutal, but obviously with his look, where he's head to toe in a white suit and tie, and he has the white crescent moon mask, and he's got the limo, and it was really cool. And it was interesting as well, because the book didn't follow a linear storyline. One issue, Mr. Knight is hunting down a serial killer who harvests body parts. The next, he could be fighting his way up an apartment building to save a little girl. Or possibly punching ghosts and tripping on dreams. It's a wacky series. I would recommend it to anybody who wants to get into Moon Knight for sure. Other than that, I have since read the Jeff Lemire run while the show was going on. And I read through it very quickly. Once I picked it up, I read a couple of chapters the first day I got it, and then after that, my next chance to read it, I just sped through the rest of it. It was really good. And it seems to have been one of the ones that the show took some influence from. It's not a direct adaptation, but there's definitely some influences in there. The run for Jeff Lemire is definitely more linear. It's got a story to it as opposed to the Ellis run. In this series, Mark Spector, Moon Knight for those who don't know, is trapped in an asylum, and the external challenge for him to face is basically trying to escape, while the internal struggle for the character in that story is to manage and ultimately live with his condition of having multiple personalities within himself. The main trio of personalities, which you might know if you've watched the show, is Mark, Stephen Grant, the billionaire, and Jake Lockley, the cab driver for the criminal underworld. This and the relationship he has with Khonshu, the Egyptian moon god, the god that brought him back to life after he was killed during his time as a mercenary. Those are kind of the main bits of the story. It's a run that I feel breaks the status quo for the character up until that point. It's definitely the one that I think a lot of people turn to for the modern Moon Knight book. I think anyway, from what I've seen, but it's definitely worth a read. And plus, as I said, it's got a singular story running through it. Yeah, I would absolutely recommend it. The Jeff Lemire run of Moon Knight. I don't want to get into specifics about parts of the story because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who isn't aware. But I'll just say that not only is it a really good story, but the art is fantastic, primarily by Greg Smallwood, but there's later contributions by other great artists such as Francesco Francavilla, James Stocco, or Stocco, apologies for the pronunciation, and Wilfredo Torres, each lending their unique style to distinguish the elements of the narrative, but also the characters, or the personas, I should say. Each artist has a different has a covers a different personality, which I think was really cool and really smart, and it's mixed in a very good way towards the end. But that's enough of the comics. Let's get into the show. When I heard there was going to be a Moon Knight show, I had hopes that it would be like Daredevil. Obviously, we'd all like shows to be like Daredevil in terms of the quality of that, but I was more thinking of the tone, the dark and gritty elements of it, and the intelligent writing. Then I heard it would be on Disney Plus. At this stage, Disney Plus really wasn't that prominent. We knew what was coming down the pipeline, but we hadn't seen much yet, from what I remember of when this was announced. In terms of casting, based on a lot of the art that I had seen from the comics, especially the Lemire run with Smallwood's art, I thought a particular actor would be very well suited for the role, and also I had seen him in a few things, and that actor is Oliver Jackson Cohen. You might know him from Mike Flanagan projects like The Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor. I thought he was great in both series, particularly Hill House, but that's my preferred one. You'll know that if you've heard previous episodes that I talked about that series. But I thought he not only looked very like the character, but I thought he would be good. And also, I thought a less well-known actor would be better able to kind of immerse themselves in the role rather than a situation of an actor being seen rather than the character. This was not the case. Oscar Isaac was cast, and while he didn't do a bad job, it was a very Hollywood choice. But regardless, he's the Moon Knight we got. I'm going to go through this review episode by episode. I did a summary of the plot for each episode, so it's a bit of context. And then I have my own kind of feelings after each one. That's how we're going to do it. Yeah, let's just get going. Episode 1. We are introduced to the show with a man who places glass shards in his shoes. This is our antagonist, Arthur Harrow. Our protagonist is shown as a man named Stephen Grant, a gift shop worker in a London museum. He loves Egypt and its mythology, but he's a bit of a pushover, a person who gets no respect paid toward him, and is ultimately just walked over most of his life. Despite this, he is charming in a quirky way, endearing despite his wimpiness, I suppose. But strange things begin with a co-worker mentioning a date that they apparently had arranged, despite him having no memory of this. He later wakes up in another part of Europe, fleeing from gun-toting henchmen and a golden scarab artifact in his pocket. He later sees Harrow, the leader of these henchmen, using some mystical ability to pass judgment on the population of this village, resulting in either celebrations and cheering of "this is a good man, this is a good woman," or the person's death. When he is confronted by these people, Stephen blacks out. Upon waking up, he not only has his hands coated in people's blood, but there are bodies strewn about the place. There is a chase with more of the violence masked by blacking out, and it's before Stephen wakes up back at home, believing it all to be a dream. The following day, he repeatedly sees flashes of a tall, pale figure with a bird skull for a head, along with voices in a hidden compartment found within his home that contained a phone and whose contacts, when they call him back, call him Mark. Stephen later finds out that he missed the date, that he had with a co-worker, and upon visiting his workplace, Harrow finds him, and it is clear that all of it was true. Harrow explains he needs the scarab artifact to release the Egyptian goddess Ammit, so that she may judge the world and devour the souls of those who would sin at any point in their lives. A jackal creature is sent to attack Stephen when he does not give up the scarab. He flees from the poorly constructed CGI monster as they both wreck the museum along the way. Stephen hides in the bathroom while the jackal attempts to force its way in. Stephen is terrified, and the mirrors around him have his reflection moving independently of him. This reflection tells him that they are not going to die so long as Stephen gives control of his own body to this reflection. The lights flicker, Stephen's eyes roll back, but the door breaks down and the jackal pounces on him. Anticlimactic almost. But then we hear the commotion still going on as the camera comes around from the bathroom. And then a sink comes flying out. It breaks into the wall, and we see the jackal fleeing. It's clawing into the ground, trying to escape. The episode concludes with this moment of Moon Knight fully realized on screen, without lack of a better term, demolishing the jackal on the ground as he repeatedly punches it in the face. And then kicks it in frustration. Once the creature is defeated, he catches his breath and turns and faces the camera and walks away. That is the end of the episode. So, my summary on my feelings about this episode. I thought for an opening it was entertaining and enjoyable. The pitiful, wimpy version of Stephen Grant was initially quite annoying. That's not even mentioning the accent, the British accent that Oscar Isaac puts onto it. It's just part of the show. We're not going to get into that. I found him annoying initially, mainly because, again, I sound like a bit of a broken record with this, but for whatever reason, Disney, Marvel, they are not happy with having strong male characters anymore. And Steven is kind of just the latest example of that. But anyway. I will say that he definitely grew on me as time went on. I think Steven is a fun character, despite, the initial thing I said about him. But Mark doesn't really get much screen time in the premiere, I should say. Mark is the reflected personality that we see in the bathroom. But when he does take over the body and becomes Moon Knight, it is very badass. It is so fun to finally see it. And the costume is really good. It's a mixture of, I think, is it the Earth 10 or Earth X version of Moon Knight where he looks like a mummy, and then the traditional version. But yeah, that was a cool way to finish the episode. Ethan Hawke's character, Arthur Harrow, was very interesting, and his influence seems quite widespread from what we can tell. Because in the episode we see people that just look like regular people, but they have a tattoo that shows that they are in allegiance with Arthur Harrow. The highlight of the episode was obviously the end, where Moon Knight is beating the crap out of this creature. But other than that, it was very interesting to have the action not be seen and left to the interpretation of the viewer. By having Steven black out, I thought that was a very fun way of using the condition of the character. And overall, the premiere was a fun intro to an obscure corner of the Marvel Universe. Episode 2. Steven is fired from his job after the security footage shows only him during the commotion the previous night, and he's decided to be the apparent cause of all that destruction. He finds Mark's storage container with his mercenary belongings, passports, weapons, things like that, and threatens to get them incarcerated. So Khonshu, the Egyptian god, attempts to intimidate him. This is the being that we saw in episode 1, who is tall, pale, and has the bird skull for his head. Stephen runs away, terrified, only to be found by Layla. Layla is the character that Disney made this show about, because she gets far more focus and attention than Moon Knight in Moon Knight. Moon Knight is only seen in costume for probably, I think someone counted it up, but I think it's 17 minutes across the 6 episodes. Anyway, she assumes Mark is putting on a voice with this British accent and wants him to sign divorce papers, which he apparently wanted. Only for Stephen to declare, "I'd never divorce you," in the tone of a teenage boy trying desperately to get the girl to pay attention to him. She also fully throws him across the room with very little effort, which caught me off guard. Fake cops arrive and arrest Stephen while Layla disappears, because Layla is able to do everything. And they take him to Harrow's commune of diversity, because every walk of life is in this place. It's somewhere in London, but yeah, London's a diverse place anyway, so we'll give them that. Where they speak gibberish and call it Mandarin, which was kind of funny. The actor that played Shang-Chi, Simu Liu, who, less said about him the better, but he called them out for their apparent ex use of gibberish and called it Mandarin, which I do find kind of funny. The debate over Khonshu and Amit's different approaches to punishing sinners is interesting, but the show cares more about the two characters having the conversation being vegan than anything else, really. The debate is that Khonshu, he punishes people after the crime, whereas Amit kills people because at one point in their life or at some point in their life they will commit a crime. Very different approaches, which I think it would have been cool to kind of flesh that out. By the way, it is also mentioned that Harrow is the former avatar of Khonshu, so we are to believe that Arthur Harrow, Ethan Hawke's character, was at one stage Moon Knight. Layla rescues Stephen by decimating all of the bodyguards, who are all twice her size. All the while, Stephen cheers and praises her the entire time. It is then that the Jackal returns. It is summoned by Harrow and throws Stephen out a window. Khonshu shouts in Mark's, or sorry, in Stephen's head to summon the suit over and over again after he couldn't when Layla told him to. He's falling, to his death from the window, and he just screams, "Suit, suit!" And he hits his head on a pipe before landing as Mr. Knight. This is the first time we've seen Mr. Knight on screen, and there are jokes made about his white suit and tie when he get and he ultimately gets his ass handed to him by the Jackal, and all the while Layla fights the creature more successfully with a broken bottle, while being smashed against a wall by the creature, which looked quite painful. Eventually, he gets one punch in, and Mark tells him that he needs to give over control of the body to him because Stephen is inexperienced with fighting and will cause unnecessary casualties. So Stephen gives in, and Mark, the real Moon Knight, emerges. Layla tells him to get the Jackal away from people, so he follows that order. From what we've seen previously, he could have well taken that thing out just then and there, but I will say it leads to the best part of the episode, which is a chase across London rooftops between Moon Knight and the Jackal. Moon Knight leads it to a particular area of London, and he caught it off guard midair by stabbing it with his moon blades and then impaling it on a spire, which was pretty cool. The CGI was slightly better, but still not great. Harrow gets the scarab artifact in the middle of all this. Layla watches him pick it up, and then Mark and Stephen argue towards the end, because Stephen still doesn't understand what's going on, and we, as the viewer, if you're not familiar, don't understand. But we learn in this conversation that Khonshu plans to replace Mark with Layla, his wife. This, it was strange to hear, but ultimately the episode ends just after a talk between Mark and Khonshu, and they wake up in Egypt. I think this episode was interesting overall, but not as good as the first. Moments like Moon Knight versus the Jackal, seeing Mr. Knight in his in live action before he does or says anything, that was cool. Khonshu demanding violence in the background of scenes was it gets me. It makes me laugh so much. It's like Steven is talking to Harrow and Khonshu's in the background saying, "Break his windpipe." Other than that, it's pretty crap in hindsight. Especially just the introduction of Layla. The character probably would have been fine if there was better writing. And ultimately, from my experience and what I've seen with storytelling, you're not going to get very much without good writing. At least not easily. But as the show goes on, it kind of gets worse. But from the initial impression, I didn't really like Layla, and I do not buy her and Mark as a couple. All right, on to episode three, because there's not really much more I could say about that without spoiling further ahead. So for episode three, we open on a kind of drawn out scene of Layla getting a fake passport made. All the while complaining about Mark and ultimately just giving exposition in a very lazy way about her father and her reputation in Cairo, which is where Mark woke up the last time. The woman who's making the passport for us is seemingly either her mother or a close relation of some kind, because it's implied. I think that they obviously know each other or have some sort of connection, but I think it's her mother. But the whole scene is pointless and adds very little. In terms of our Moon Knight, Mark is trying to get information on Amit's tomb from Harrow's men, fighting them on a rooftop in Egypt. It's a strange dance fight that it's like something out of an 80s, 70s or 80s action thing. But they at least point out how stupid it is having Mark even punch one of the guys as he licks his knife, trying to be intimidating. Unfortunately, it results in a very bloodless injury. Steven begs Mark through the reflections in the knife, because that's how they communicate when one is in control of the body, not to kill the men, but they black out, waking up in a taxi. He sees the men when he's going by in the taxi again, giving chase before being distracted by Steven yet again, which resulted in him easily being knocked out. When he's on the ground, we hear the effect noise for blacking out, and he wakes up as he pulls the knife out of one of the men. Neither Mark nor Steven say it was them. They're confused, but it doesn't get addressed further than that. And this is brushed over by Khonshu telling Mark to threaten the youngest thug, which ended in the young man killing himself, falling down to his death off a cliff. Harrow and his followers have very easily found the tomb of Amit and began digging. The Khonshu changes the sky. He eclipses the sun to gain the attention of the other Egyptian gods. I don't think I mentioned it so far, but Khonshu was previously exiled or banished from where the other gods reside, which is outside of regular time and space, I guess. It's referred to as the Overvoid. So the Egyptian gods, they can only interact with the world through avatars, like Mark is for Khonshu. But he manipulates the sky to get their attention so they can hold a meeting. Because they want to explain to the other gods that Arthur Harrow is trying to release Amit. Amit having been previously imprisoned by the other gods for being too dangerous. The only danger with this is that Khonshu says if they anger the gods, they could potentially imprison him in stone as a stone statue. When we get to the meeting of the gods, it's a very diverse meeting of the gods' avatars. So the avatars arrive and they are then possessed by their individual gods. The gods speak clearly through the avatars they possess, and the reason I say that is whereas Khonshu, when he possesses Mark, he speaks in fits of awkward shouting and also insults that present them in a very poor light for their argument. Khonshu is already disliked by the other gods, but he tells them that Harrow's plan to release the imprisoned Amit so she can rule as ultimately judge, jury, and executioner. They summon Harrow to get his side of the story, asking him if he's planning on releasing Amit. He says no. They believe him, and the debate is over. Harrow turns the court, if you will, to the argument of Khonshu being the one taking advantage of Mark due to his mental illness. The gods tell Mark he's in a safe space, and Mark tells them that he may indeed be unwell, but that is not important. It is unimportant compared to Harrow's plan to release Amit, which will affect everyone. They do not listen to him, and when Mark slash Khonshu, it's unclear, tries to hit Harrow, Osiris, the head god in this situation of the Egyptians, stops him with his powers and states they do not tolerate violence. They warn Khonshu that if he manipulates the sky again, he will indeed be imprisoned within stone. One of the other avatars tells Mark about a sarcophagus which contains a map to Amit's tomb. Mark proceeds to ask random people on the street in Cairo about it and immediately calls attention to himself. To which Layla points out, and then she brings up that she has a contact who has the sarcophagus. Very convenient. This contact is a wealthy collector of Egyptian artifacts, played by the sadly now passed Gaspard Ulliel. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. Nothing against him, but I was never a huge fan of his. I'd seen some of his other stuff that he's done, so his performance wasn't something I was particularly impressed with, and the character was very dull. He had no development. All the indication that we got is that one, he's rich, and two, he has a connection to Layla of some kind. Even his bodyguard knows Layla. The bodyguard being an assumably well-trained man who is very well built. Like this is a big guy. But when things go to shit later on, Layla easily kills him with her neck blades. She had blades hidden in a necklace. Which it was kind of funny watching that because she's dressed relatively normally and then she has these ornate this ornate necklace. It stands out, and then later on where she pulls it apart and shocker, it's two blades. Now she killed him even though he definitely hit her against the wall and paralyzed her if that was a real fight. Because the point of a wall goes right to the middle of her spine, and yeah, it looked incredibly painful. Anyway, Mark and Stephen have to do some interesting detective work together, talking through reflections to decipher the map within the sarcophagus, but it is burned by Harrow before they finish. Layla steals the remnants though. Moon Knight eventually comes out for a less than stellar fight, but it's something at least, the suit is always cool to see. The best part of the episode is after that, at least from a visual standpoint, where Khonshu and Stephen as Mr. Knight turn back the sky to how it was 2,000 years ago, because Khonshu remembers every single night. So they do this so Layla can scan the sky to pinpoint the location of the tomb, because they realize that the constellations and stars would have shifted in the time since this map was created. There are several apps that you can use to do that anyway, rather than getting Khonshu to manipulate the sky again, but he is ultimately imprisoned, and he before he disappears, he tells Layla to tell Mark to free him. Harrow then tells the imprisoned Khonshu, because he's just let back into the pyramid in which they have this court, that none of this would be possible if not for what Harrow had gone through as a servant of Khonshu, and that he owes his victory to him. So the scene with the sky was great to watch. It was really cool, especially for just, on a visual point. Even if it's pointless, if you really think about it. Other than that, the episode to that point was the least interesting for me. The action was underwhelming. There are stupid moments like Mark being impaled by multiple spears, which in itself isn't bad, but because he has this healing armor, or the Moon Knight suit is healing, it heals him for it's from Khonshu's power. He is in a very vulnerable position though, because he has well, must be three or four spears holding him into the ground. But then he removes his cowl, his kind of his mask and hood, when he sees Layla is in trouble, just to shout her name, and then he puts it back on. I mean, I know you want to get your actors seen, but what the fuck? Like, I don't even know. That's just, it's moronic. Anyway, speaking of morons, the Egyptian gods are fucking idiots. They hold court with Khonshu and Mark. They hear what he has to say through the terrible way he fucking tells it, and then they call Harrow and they're like, "Are you doing a bad thing?" He says, "No, I'm not doing a bad thing." I'm like, "Okay, see ya, thank you." It's fucking stupid. And I think ultimately this episode is just a great example of lazy writing. On to episode four. We pick up where we left off in the previous episode. Mark, he is unconscious, or Stephen, I should say, is unconscious, and Layla is saving him by throwing him down a sand dune, and then she takes out one of Harrow's sets of henchmen that are going around in a truck with a mounted gun. Because she throws a flare at them and they explode. Anyway, other than that, Layla starts cheating on Mark with Stephen, because initially they are very flirtatious, but then they actually proceed to kiss later on. Yeah, Stephen. He. Stephen is like, I hate using the term, but he's just a simp. For Layla, I really don't like using that term, but like, yeah, that's the only way I could describe him, really, because other than his relationship with Mark, that's really all he is a simp for Layla. But yeah, they go to where Harrow's men have been digging, and it's conveniently not guarded anymore. Like everybody's just gone. They go inside and they have to fight a mummy, and it would be kind of fun to see Moon Knight fight a mummy, but he doesn't have powers at the moment. So Layla kills the mummy, but Layla kills the mummy when groups of armed men with guns, men and women, I should say, men and women, with guns could not kill this thing, but she manages to get it. A kind of interesting thing is that we discover in this tomb that Alexander the Great was the avatar of Ammit, and he betrayed her. Which that's just kind of interesting. His body, his remains within his sarcophagus are an actual prison for Ammit's statue, which that's interesting enough. Layla is then informed by Harrow that Mark is the cause for her father's death, and she proceeds to start pushing Mark around and getting angry. And yeah, he explains that while he was present for her father's death, he did not kill him. He didn't mention that he was also bleeding out at the time too. This will be explored in the next episode, but I just figured I'd mention that here. But She says that while he may not have killed him, he brought a killer to her father. Anyway, Harrow arrives and kills Mark by shooting him in the chest a bunch of times. Sudden, right? Mark wakes up in an asylum. Some of the inmates are people he knows. Layla is an inmate who steals his winning bingo card, and Harrow's followers are the orderlies. And Harrow himself is a psychologist who Mark is apparently the patient of. Mark attempts to escape, finding a room with a sarcophagus whose occupant is screaming to be let out in panic. When he opens it, the person emerges is Stephen. The twin personalities are in their own bodies, and when they realize this, they pull each other together and for a heartwarming embrace. I actually really do love this moment. I think it's really good how it's done. It's one of my favorite moments in the show, to be honest. The two walk around the asylum looking for a way out, coming across a room where they, if they peek in, they can see a red and black sarcophagus with a very angry occupant who they decide not to release. Not quite sure what is going on. They make their way to the first exit or exit-looking door that they can find. This is until they are stopped by a walking hippopotamus in Egyptian armor, who, in a very British modern accent, says, "Hi." Mark and Stephen both scream in different pitches as the episode cuts to black. This episode was overall pretty boring and not really great. The last 10 minutes in the asylum was the best part by far, and for sure the most interesting part. As someone, as I said earlier on, who had begun reading the Lemire run around, during the time this show was airing, it was something I was excited to see potentially on screen, because a lot of really visually interesting stuff and storytelling wise happens in that run. Despite this, I can say that the episode on a whole was not worth the last few minutes. I'll admit the ending was suitably surprising in terms of the shock value, but really there isn't much more I can say on the episode because not much happens other than Mark being shot, but even that's brushed over very quickly. Due to the lack of powers because of Khonshu's imprisonment, there wasn't even any moonlight. On to episode 5. Episode 5. This is by far the best episode in the show. It follows a simple enough story premise where Mark and Stephen are told by Taweret, the Egyptian goddess, the hippo, that they must balance their hearts on the scales so that they may pass into the Egyptian form of heaven. If they do not succeed, they will be trapped in the sands in which they are traveling through for eternity. They are on a ship. They are on an old Egyptian ship that is navigating over a sea of sand, and within that ship is the asylum. It is a construct of in their minds. So they walk around the asylum, and as they go through different doors, it either brings them to areas that represent certain elements of themselves or actual flashbacks. This reveals a few things to the characters, and I will be mentioning some of the biggest things. First off, Mark had a younger brother, and that younger brother drowned while they were playing in a cave. Due to this, his mother blamed him for the younger brother's death, growing to resent Mark as a child. She drank and openly talked about how the brother died because of Mark very often, seemingly, not even taking part in Mark's birthdays as the years went on. This leads into the other big revelation for anyone who didn't know going into the show. When his mother would take out her anger on him through physically beating him with a belt, Mark gave himself over to what would become the personality of Stephen. Stephen was his way of dealing with that. A personality based on a B-movie adventure film protagonist, a rip-off Indiana Jones of sorts. British accent included. Stephen learns he is a fictional personality constructed by Mark, and not, in fact, the original person as he thought. Mark says the purpose of Stephen was to exist away from the pain of Mark's life with his mother and father, the father of which who didn't protect him from her. This is kind of confusing, though, as Stephen often calls his mother, as we see in the initial episodes. I don't think I mentioned that. So he calls her, but he's always leaving voicemails, seemingly. And he remembers having the mother around as he grew up, being loving and kind. But when he's on the phone with her, I suppose we're left to assume that it's part of the coping mechanism that he imagines either having spoken to her or having received a message back. It is when Mark is unable to go inside and attend his mother's wake after her death that we see what caused the instability between the two personalities begin. His father asks him to come in, but he refuses, walking away, drinking out of a flask. As he makes his way down the street away from the house, he begins to break down in tears in the street. The performance of Oscar Isaac in this scene in particular is fantastic. He's a great actor. I'm not going to say any different. But it conveys a few things. You can see the years of pain in his from his life on his face. The blame he feels for what happened to his brother. The blame his mother had for him added on to that. And then the childhood he lost due to his father's apparent inability to stop his mother from abusing him. It all comes to a breaking point eventually, and Mark's pain becomes too much, and then Stephen comes out. Stephen wonders where he is and calls his mom to talk about it as he wanders off. Stephen and Mark argue about these revelations, both having learnt more about not only themselves but of the other. Stephen tells Mark he was a child when his brother died, and it couldn't have possibly been his fault. And what his mother did to him and all the things she said were wrong. This is a great moment in the show. It's the most development that either of these guys have had. The last big thing we witness from their past is the point in Mark's life where his time as a mercenary comes to an end and he is reborn as Moon Knight. They're in the desert, outside the Temple of Khonshu, and they see bodies all around, one of which is Layla's father. Mark, in the flashback, is bleeding out within the temple after being attacked by Bushman. Bushman is a character we do not get to see in the show, so I definitely recommend the Lemire run to show you the lead up to this. He is a very dark character from what I remember. Mark is dying beneath the statue of Khonshu, where he hears a voice from the deity asking if Mark will protect the travelers of the night, deal out the justice of Khonshu, and live again. Khonshu also makes the point of Mark having a broken mind, which suits his needs for an avatar/servant. When Mark accepts the offer, his eyes burn white, the rage on his face comes to the surface as he rises to his feet. The armor of Khonshu forms around him as the god beckons him to be his and live again, be his Moon Knight. This all fails to balance their hearts, though, and they are attacked by creatures on the ship as they attempt to drag them into the sand of the underworld. Mark and Stephen both fight for themselves and each other at points, until Mark gets caught, about to be pulled over. Stephen realizes that he is still the same person, but he's also Mark, and has some of the same capabilities within himself. Picking up a weapon and fighting to reach Mark, it ends with Stephen getting pulled overboard, and upon making contact with the sand, becomes trapped as stone with it. Mark screams out for the boat to be turned back around to save him, but the hearts balance, and Mark turns to see he is in paradise, alone. So, this is the best character development for Mark, especially seeing as he didn't really have much prior to this, but this is the second last episode of the whole thing. This should have been episode three at the latest. But compared to characters like Harrow and Layla, like this is the most attention that Mark Moon Knight has gotten. I was underwhelmed by the scene of how Mark became Moon Knight. It was really cool to see, but it could have been done better, particularly in regards to the pacing, the framing, and the special effects. The special effects in this show are really hit or miss. Like, it's funny how the transformations for into Moon Knight in the earlier episodes were better than the later episodes. You think they would have kind of divided it between all six or five, realistically, because you don't really see him in episode four. But yeah, I think it could have just been done better. It looked a little bit cheap, but there's some shots in there that are really cool. There's a shot of the statue of Khonshu and one of Mark's face. He's scowling as his eyes turn white. That is really cool. There are some scenes in the asylum with Dr. Harrow, but I don't really even feel like they're worth mentioning that much. The only thing is that Stephen slash Mark, their mannerisms change and their accent changes to one that we haven't heard yet. It's a bit more of a possible New York accent. The biggest surprise was the abusive mother. I never thought I'd see a bad mother in modern Marvel. Yes, we don't actually see on screen the beating, but it's still a hell of a lot more than I thought they'd ever show. His father was ineffectual, obviously, but not really the typical stupid slash bad dad that we've seen in Marvel, that they're seemingly dead set on portraying. I mean, look at Hawkeye. When we see Kate Bishop's dad, all we are told is that he's done crappy things with their money or whatever, and then he's killed off within 5 minutes. So Moon Knight's dad's got something ahead on him anyway. If anything, I'd say I could look at him as a man who has lost a child, didn't know how to help his wife, and inevitably because of that, he lost his other son, just in a different way. That's the best way I can look at it, really. Especially in hindsight of having seen the whole first, well, I'd say first season, but it's a limited series now, so we're probably not going to get any more. But yeah, episode five, best episode. And time for the episode six, the finale. It's a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest. Not only is it the shortest finale for a Disney Plus show, but it is also very, very rushed. So rushed, in fact, that the end of the story is in the post-credit scene. The first third of the episode is all about Layla, how she is hiding within the group, following Harrow, planning to kill him, before she is ultimately stopped by Towerette, but we'll get to that later. Harrow now has a lot more power than he did previously. His cane, which he used to walk around with the two crocodile heads for Amit, is now an axe. It's only got one crocodile head now. The kind of I it's, it'll sound like I'm rushing through, but this is just kind of how the episode goes. But in the course of the episode, Amma is released. She kills the avatars of the gods, and they're also, they're the ones who so easily dismiss the accusations against Harrow. Sorry, Harrow killed them, I should say that, not Amit. But yeah, so almost 15 minutes into the episode, which is just barely over a half an hour, realistically, if you take away the intros and credits and all that, we finally get back to Mark. With Mark, he isn't happy with the idea of him being in eternal paradise and Steven suffering alone forever. So he gives up that paradise to try and reunite with Steven, so at least neither of them will be alone. This sacrifice allows both of them to be free of the sand prison. The only problem is once they are revived, their body still has a bunch of bullets in it. Towerette gets a message to Layla through a dead body, possessing it to release Khonshu, just before praising her and saying how her father would be so proud about her success, and once he finds out, he'll be so happy, even offering to make her avatar. First of all, as far as I remember, Layla doesn't know the Egyptian gods are real. I mean, she talks about how she knows Mark has the suit in terms of the Moon Knight suit, but does she know for sure that the Egyptian gods are real? Because the dead body just starts talking to her and, says, "Oh, don't kill that guy that you're planning on killing." Why? Because I'm a god, it's anyway, there's no point in lingering on it really. But yeah, she offers her to make her avatar, and Layla says no. So Layla releases Khonshu, and he immediately offers to make her his avatar. Repeatedly, she lets him know that she doesn't need him to win. And now that Khonshu is free, Mark and Steven can heal once they are revived, and they meet up with Khonshu to make a new arrangement. The new deal being that when Amit is imprisoned once more and Harrow is defeated, that they will be free from servitude to Khonshu, and Layla will not be pursued as a replacement. Khonshu grants Mark the ability to fly to get to the pyramid to face Harrow in time, while Khonshu fights Amit. Layla calls on Towerette to become her avatar and give her power, and is given a suit with golden bladed wings. She is the Scarlet Scarab, even if not named. This is a gender swapped obscure character from the olden days of Marvel. With these powers, she becomes the unstoppable force surrounding every part of this finale. She's also surrounded by a shit ton of plot armor. At one point, a bunch of guys are shooting at her, and they are right in front of her, and they are only shooting at her wings that cover the top half of her torso. Her lower half and her legs are all completely exposed, and they are standing right in front of her. Anywho, back to this. Mark and Steven both get opportunities to fight, and switching back and forth between the two personalities, which shifts them between the two costumes, was actually really fun to see. It was very unique visually, which I thought was very fun. And they get cut short by either Harrow attacking them and beating them up, or Layla having to come in and rescue our so-called protagonist. Layla flies around and fights the bad guys, saving civilians, and the show very bluntly declaring that she is indeed the first Egyptian superhero. Representation is great. I'll put it that way. But there's a way to do it where it isn't fucking cringy. And while all this is happening, Amit and Khonshu, the two Egyptian gods, are having a kaiju brawl. They are both the size of buildings, basically, but they are doing it without the need for avatars. And we are explicitly told the contrary is required. That they need avatars to interact with the real world, and that otherwise they are only capable of observing. So that's a pretty big inconsistency. As per fucking usual, Steven is just in awe of Layla, now because of her new look as well, and he wants to show off their new moves, which is when they go into the fight scene, going back and forth between himself and Mark. Mark seemingly can't defeat Harrow, but blacks out, waking up to see himself standing over Harrow holding an axe to his head. When he comes to see all this, Layla asks, what did he just do? They then move on to the next rush scene with plot convenience. Layla somehow knows the binding spell for the Egyptian gods that she can use Mark to help her with, so they can bind Amit into Harrow's body. This then results in the choice of whether to kill Harrow and Amit within him, This choice is kind of ridiculous, though, because not only have both of them done terrible things, including killing people, but they will undoubtedly do it again in a pursuit of power. Mark tells Khonshu that if he wants them dead, he must do it himself, and then to release Stephen and Mark. Khonshu agrees and does as they ask. So they then wake up at home in London. But the story actually concludes in the post-credit scene. In the post-credit scene, we find Arthur Harrow still with Amit bound into him, we assume, in an asylum, and this is a real one. And he is taken out on a wheelchair by someone to a white limo. The driver who took Harrow kicks the wheelchair over in a very funny fashion, in my opinion, when he's done with it. Once in the limo, Harrow looks around and sees the other occupant is Khonshu, now dressed in a white suit, not unlike Stephen's. He tells Khonshu that they cannot be harmed by him, to which Khonshu reveals that he never actually released Mark Spector from the deal, as he is too much of a broken individual and thus too perfect a tool for him to manipulate, concluding by introducing his friend, Jake Lockley, the now revealed third personality within Mark. This is a character a lot of people wanted to see, myself included. He was the one within the red sarcophagus. He was the new accent and mannerisms, and the one who killed the men in Cairo along with fighting Harrow. Speaking of Harrow, Jake puts a couple of bullets in his head and drives off in their limo with the license plate Spectre, along with Khonshu. The end. So I'll use the summary for episode 6 to kind of summarize my feelings on the show, I suppose. The finale was very rushed. While it was enjoyable in the sense that there's a lot going on screen, and you would think for the most part, wow, I didn't think I'd see that in a show, and then you're immediately on to the next thing. Usually Layla showing up to have another moment instead of the character the show was about. The fact that we at least got a bit of Moon Knight slash Mr. Knight, whatever you want to say, in costume on this episode, was something. Mr. Knight could at least do something in a fight now. So Steven could at least do something in a fight, even though he's still a joke compared to his book counterpart. I will say though, both suit designs for both versions of Moon Knight are fantastic. My only complaint is the stitch that runs up Mr. Knight's mask, but I understand they probably want to break up all the white in some instance, but both suits themselves are fantastic. Unfortunately, particularly with Moon Knight rather than Mr. Knight, he's CGI most of the time. And not only is the CGI not always the best, but the CGI for the transformations are particularly crap towards the end. There, you can really see the difference in, like, say, his suit up scene in the finale versus him walking around in the suit. It's almost cartoonish in the difference. Something that makes no sense as well is that Mark, who is a trained mercenary, still struggles with his abilities, which that's not the problem. Every character has to learn their power. Steven definitely struggles at the beginning too. But Layla immediately becomes unbeatable upon receiving her powers. That is on top of how already unbeatable she was before, being a regular sized woman in the series. No, that's nothing against, women, but if there's if say in like episode 3 with the security guard, if there's a buff black dude, twice her size, she's not winning that fight in real life, but anyway, it's a series, whatever. It's the way they're going. She gets more focus in the 6 episodes than the character show the show is named after. That's not nothing fucking new, really. At this point, Marvel are just becoming the masters of the bait and switch now, or should I say Disney, which unfortunately is probably going to be the case for the upcoming Kenobi series at the end of this month. I don't know much about the actress. I'm not going to say anything against her, but just the character herself was just thoroughly unlikable for me. They did very little to humanize her, and when they did have moments like that, it was not enough. Outside of one or two scenes, there wasn't really much. The one thing I can think of for it is when they're going to meet their contact, and her and Mark are on a little boat going there, and they talk about their relationship and their wedding, and it's something, but it's not great, but it is something, I suppose, which, we're trying to be positive. But I never really bought them as a couple, especially not a couple who apparently have been married for a couple of years, I'm assuming, based off the information we get. She spends more time with Stephen than the man she's married to, which is str you know, some obviously it can't be helped because the multiple personalities, they're not exactly fully in control. But Stephen himself is supposed to be a Bruce Wayne-esque character in the comics, where he's a billionaire persona for Mark to use, or in the later stages for him to become. But now he's a British doormat of a man who is who is there most of the time just to be a cheerleader for Layla. Mark really doesn't get a lot of development or focus in the show that is about him. Only really episode 5 does the most amount of work to humanize him. He's a character who's capable of being humorous, or more often than not, in moderner interpretations, very dark. But even if you look in the comics, like, Moon Knight can be fucking really he can be very funny with characters, particularly when he interacts with people like Spider-Man. But you more often than not, he is dark. But even that, it's, the series takes the piss out of his condition most of the time, at any opportunity sometimes. That's without even mentioning Jake Lockley, the personality that, as I said, a lot of people wanted to see and was teased at different points throughout the series. But he is resigned to, for the most part, a post-credit scene, which I would understand in a way if the show was getting a season 2, but from the looks of it, it's not. Which, ultimately leaves the future of the show very much in doubt. And even Oscar Isaacs himself has said that he doesn't think that they're going to be doing any more, at least not of an individual Moon Knight show. Whether he shows up in a Midnight Suns project or something else, I don't know. I would very much like to see this character again, in the hopes that they could improve it, or at least just to see the suit with better CGI. But there really isn't much to invest in the show because we don't know the character prior if you're new to it, and other than that, there's the only other investment that there's really there is that you have the assumption that Disney is, says you should invest in this, not only your money but your time, or in the expectation that you will have to know this program to understand the Moon Knight spin-off starring Layla and Towerette that they probably want to make. Speaking of the hippo, why the hell is the Egyptian god of fertility, women, and children ferrying the souls to the afterlife instead of Anubis, the god of the underworld in Egyptian mythology that serves that role in basically every other adaptation of Egyptian myth, even the comics, but other stuff as well. I mean, it's not a great movie, but even Gods of Egypt got that right. But they probably just didn't want another male character on screen at this rate. But anyway, that's just something that popped into my head while I was typing this. I was like, why wasn't Anubis the character there? Other than that, this show really could have been something, man. It really could have been great. And you can see glimpses of it every once in a while. But it suffers because of, the Disneyfication. I'm gonna assume nobody else has used that term, but it's probably unlikely. But because of that, and then the need to conform to the Marvel formula, I guess, big CGI battles at the end, all that crap. That and, all the pandering crap we mentioned before. I will say that for me, currently, it's the least shit Disney Plus series after this, I would probably say Falcon and the Winter Soldier, mainly just because I like that type of Marvel story where it's like the Captain America, because that's my favorite trilogy in the Marvel universe. Like the semi street level stuff, but I mainly from that it was just John Walker that I still think was worth paying attention to. But that doesn't mean it's good. If the show was something you enjoyed, I am happy for you. Honestly, I am. I'm glad you enjoyed it. If it got you interested enough to pick up the comics, that's fantastic. I really hope that's the case for somebody out there, because I would encourage you to do the comics as quickly as you can. Like, get to the comics as quickly and not read through them. But also, if there's a bit of background noise, sorry, my dog is with me and she really wants attention. So that's if you're hearing that, that's what that is. But her name's Millie, by the way. She says hello. But yeah, so the comics for Moon Knight, I would definitely say to have a look at those. I will say the cast did the best they could with the material, even if the material was subpar. Much like other Disney Plus series, really. If you look at Tom Hiddleston and Loki, he's fun to watch, even if he's not acting the way he should, given the character that he's supposed to be and stuff like that. But anywho, I enjoyed watching the show while it was coming on each week. Watching it week to week, even. But as a complete story, it doesn't really hold up. It's inconsistent in the pacing, its own rules, because it breaks several of them, especially in the finale, and its tone, especially the marketing, because the marketing, like the trailers and all that, made it look like it was going to be dark and serious, and it looked really interesting, but the show just makes a joke out of it all the time. There's often long stints without anything really happening of note. Ultimately, I think the show just feels like it's meant to set up a bigger, better project. But poor foundations can't hold great things. So, I think that's kind of all I've got to say on the matter for Moon Knight. I'd say for those who want to experience a good Moon Knight story, pick up a comic because this ain't it. And on that note, I think we will leave it there for today. This took a while to get recorded, obviously even longer to actually get to. Apologies again for that. Unfortunately, everybody has a job they need to do. But I have a few other episodes planned, like a Clone Wars episode and a few other ones. I've been getting some good interactions with from you guys on the Instagram for at State of the Multiverse on Instagram. I'll usually post polls and ideas of what people might want to see on there. So yeah, if you want to interact with the show, if you want to send me a message, either ask questions or have a conversation about something in the show or give ideas, anything like that, State of the Multiverse on Instagram. Can't wait to hear from you guys. Really appreciate the interactions we've had lately because the channel, the podcast channel, I should say. And the Instagram, they've been growing, and it's a slow process, but it's really great when you see people getting in more enjoyment and interaction and putting in effort to interact with your show. It's obviously great to see. The previous break I had from this was 2 years, so now that I'm back into it, I want to keep it going as consistently as I can. Again, as I've said before, I am hoping to do some guests eventually. I just need to get those sorted and figure out what we will be discussing when I have guests on. But I will update you guys on that when I have more information. Other than that, I would say I hope you enjoyed. Again, if this convinced you to pick up a Moon Knight comic and or watch the show, great. I would recommend the comics first, though. But other than that, I really hope you enjoyed listening. I hope possibly I have gained new listeners from this. That would be great. Welcome aboard if you are. If not, maybe come back and we'll try a different topic or go through some of our older episodes. And I think we'll finish it there for today. I hope you enjoyed, as I just said. And I will update you guys when I have episodes closer to being done. Other than that, I've been your host, Reese, and you've been listening to State of the Multiverse. Goodbye.